Marx follows the ever-changing landscape to discuss the latest pressing issues relevant to brand owners in Europe and beyond. During this series, Marx members and special guests share updates, experiences, and opinions. This is IP Law Today. This is Talking Marx.
Hello and welcome to the Talking Marx podcast. I'm James Nurton, the Marx editor. Today's podcast is about lookalikes, and specifically the new edition of the lookalike chart, which is compiled by members of the Marx Unfair Competition team. And I'm delighted to be joined by two members of that team today who will tell us more about it. They are Felipe Daneman Lundgren of Daneman Simpson Bigler and Ipanema Moreira in Brazil. Felipe is an attorney who focuses on trademark prosecution and enforcement, and he's co-vice chair of the Unfair Competition team. And also by Bence Bozoki, who is senior IP counsel for the Mars Wrigley Global Business, specializing in creating and executing enforcement strategies, leading trademark litigation, and advising on building a strong trademark portfolio. Welcome to both of you.
Thank you, James. Delighted to be here.
Yes, I'm also really happy to be here, James. Good morning or good afternoon to you.
Thank you both. So I'd like to start, Felipe, with you, if that's okay. And perhaps you could tell me a little bit about what is the aim of the lookalike chart and how has it evolved over the past few years?
Yes, James, that's great. You know, the lookalike chart is one of the most traditional and longstanding projects of the Unfair Competition team. It has been going on for over 10 years, I believe more than 15 years, actually. And it's updated yearly, you know, so the information is constantly updated. So people have, you know, things to look really fresh information to consult. And the real objective of the chart is to provide really practical information to users. You know, it's of course not the objective to substitute the local agents in each country, but, you know, to provide very short and concrete information, for example, on the requirements to acquire proprietary rights on lookalikes. How long does it take to grant a preliminary injunction in the different countries? What are the requirements for the grant of a preliminary injunction in cases of violation of lookalikes? How much does it cost on average to litigate in each of the countries? And things like that, you know, really practical aspects that can really assist people when they have an international portfolio and they're considering litigation on lookalikes in different jurisdictions. And just to conclude on this question, the chart covers 47 countries, mostly focus on European countries, but we also have some countries in Latin America, in Asia, the Middle East. So, you know, the intent is to always expand a little bit the chart.
Very interesting. Thank you, Felipe. And I mean, it sounds like it's a lot of work. I know there are quite a few people involved. Is that right, from the different countries? I mean, how many people were involved with this year's?
Yes, James. We have, you know, as said, we're covering currently 47 countries. So we have people from each of these countries working on this chart. We usually use members of Marx. So each of these 47 people involved in the chart are members of Marx and have knowledge of each of the covered jurisdictions. So it's quite far-reaching project. You're right.
Great. And you mentioned, obviously, that it's a very practical resource. So, Bence, from your point of view, as I said, you're in-house, you know, what makes the chart particularly useful from an in-house counsel perspective?
Thank you, James. I think it's useful from various angles and perspectives. It, first of all, it informs the strategy of a business, so an IP, the IP strategy of our business. We as in-house counsel have a global lens. We have a global perspective. So every country is relevant for us, unlike in some other cases for private practitioners where they might be focusing on their jurisdiction or their region. And we can also get information about the costs to litigate in a certain jurisdiction. We oversee the budget, so we can easily double check whether a certain action is in budget in a certain jurisdiction or not. And if we wanted to, we can decide where to take action. We could forum shop as well. But I think most importantly, we can follow and just keep up to date on the trends and how the lookalike landscape is evolving. I think it's fascinating to just look at that and compare countries and what they're going through in terms of the legal developments. So it is a really, really useful resource for us.
And I think we might come on to this a bit more in a bit more detail in a minute, but do you think in general that lookalikes is an area where there's a lot of developments? Are there a lot of changes in different countries, or is it somewhere, is it an area of law that's a bit more stable and predictable?
Great question, James. compared to what? You know, it's always, in comparison to other areas of the law, it is difficult to say whether it's more stable or... Mm-hmm. Or more evolving. Certainly, I am keeping an eye out on the latest developments and try to just, as much as an in-house counsel can stay up to date, I'm trying my best. And I think there are trends that brand owners would like and welcome in certain parts of the world, whereas we would also potentially welcome other changes that aren't necessarily coming or aren't in the pipeline in other parts of the world.
Yeah. Yeah. So it's very important to keep monitoring what's happening and make sure you're up to date.
Precisely. Yes.
Thank you. So Felipe, perhaps I could just come back to you and ask you to tell us a little bit more about this year's chart and the changes in this year's. I mean, you mentioned the number of countries. What are the other changes this year? Are there any new questions or any notable new countries that have been added this year or anything else?
Yeah, James, we did, what we do with the charts in the unfair competition team is that, we do a more shortened version of the updates every year. We just update the answers to each of the questions with our context in the 47 countries. And every couple of years, we then do what we call a full review of the chart, where we kind of go through all the questions and update them as well, not only the answers to the questions in each country. And we did that this year. We did a full review of the questions to make sure that they're really up to date and that they cope with the challenges of lookalikes or, fighting lookalikes in each country. So, this year users will find an updated chart with the questions duly updated. We have not added any new countries this year, but we're discussing about this. It's definitely one of the objectives of the group is to make this chart ever more having new countries on the chart as well. So, the idea is to include, so far, we do not have any countries in Africa, and we have very few countries in the Middle East. So probably the chart will evolve to include countries in these areas in the future, also because those are regions where the problem of lookalikes, at least from what we have been discussing in our group, is an increasing problem. So yes, for the future, our intention is to add more countries. But so far, we have the 47 ones, which are concentrated in Europe, but also have some countries in South America, the US, and Asia as well.
Yeah, interesting. Yeah. So, Bent, was it a lot of work to put together? And can you tell us a little bit about the process? I mean, Felipe mentioned that. It's, I think you said, every 2 years to do this major review. How long a process is it, and how are the team members and so on involved?
I think now is the time to thank everybody who's contributed and thank Felipe as well, who has been a great leader of this project. It is considerable work, I would say. It needs coordination, and I would say the first year that this group of people have worked together was, I believe, a couple of years ago. That was when it took it took more time to align on how we are going to approach it, how we are going to split the countries, who are we going to talk to, and perhaps most importantly, whether the chart needs any substantial update. And I think because we've aligned on something that works for us, the last couple of years have been pretty smooth, and we've gotten updates back from the respective MARCS members who reached out to in the jurisdictions. I think it's the more we do it and the longer we do it, the shorter it takes, the shorter time.
Yes. I mean, and as Felipe said earlier, it's been a number of years now that the chart has been published, hasn't it, and reviewed each year. So I guess, yeah, there's a lot of accumulated experience there now.
Sorry to interrupt, James and Benz, but if I may add, just so people know, how we do it is that we have a subgroup in the unfair competition team, which is kind of responsible for this update procedure, you know, every year. So we kind of like split the work among the members of this subgroup. And I would like to just mention them, their names here, because it's Benz Bozoki, who's talking here to you today. But this group is also composed of Selma Unlu from Turkey, Anne Virginie La Spada from Switzerland, and Yana Tsingankova from Russia. So, you know, it's a really, you know, you see people from different countries, each one gets responsible for some of the countries. So even though the workload is quite big, as Benz mentioned, but we kind of split it among us. And this makes, I think, the update procedure much, much smoother. And, you know, we can be sure to achieve that every year. So I think it's just important to mention that how this is done every year.
Yeah, that's very useful, Felipe. Thank you. And all those people you mentioned, I think, are members of the unfair competition team, aren't they? So they're listed on the MARCS website as on that team page. And if anyone wants to find out more about them, that would be the place to go. And I guess, would it be fair to say that if anyone has any questions or comments for future editions, they can contact one of those people?
Of course. I think we're all open to suggestions, to critics. You know, I think the aim is really always to make the charts more interesting for users. So yes, any suggestions are always very welcome.
Great. And it may also be a good opportunity to mention that the latest edition can be downloaded from the Unfair Competition Team page as well. You do have to be a MARCS member to access that. But once you are logged in, it's just a question of downloading it, and it's a spreadsheet that you can then save. Good. So maybe we could just talk a little bit more about lookalikes more generally then in the time we have left, because it clearly is, as you said, Benz, a very important issue for many businesses, many companies today. So I just wondered, you know, what trends you're seeing. You know, are lookalikes more of a problem, less of a problem than they have been in the past? Are people more or less sophisticated? Are there trends that you're seeing in different sectors? Felipe, do you have any thoughts to start with?
Sure, James. I think the problem of lookalikes is still a substantial problem in a lot of countries, at least in my view, and Benz can complement and add his view later on. But at least in my view, I think the infringers are getting more sophisticated. So, you know, the time that, you know, we had those really blatant imitations with the exact same colors or, you know, reproductions of visual elements of you know, famous getups, I think this time is gone. This still exists. But, you know, the infringement is getting more sophisticated. The infringers are getting smarter, you know, are kind of learning how to do it. So it gets, you know, more and more difficult to fight these lookalikes. You know, people have to also, you know, right owners have to find creative solutions and creative arguments to go against these infringements. So that's my general feeling about the topic, but I don't know if Benz has a different view on that or if he wants to complement something.
Do you agree, Benz?
I completely agree. I think they are becoming more sophisticated. They are seeking to register their own rights often for their packaging, for example, their branding, which in some jurisdictions makes it more difficult for the brand owner to take action. I think private label lookalike packaging is trending again in Europe, for example, as brands are forced to increase prices due to rising costs and inflation. So that makes the branded products more and more expensive for the retailer to stock, and therefore they're turning to their own private label products and trying to make them look more like the branded product, which has always been an issue in Europe. But I think in the coming months and years, potentially it could be even more important for the brand owners to find the right means to take action against these products. And one of the means might be unfair advantage, more precisely taking unfair advantage of the reputation of a trademark, which is not necessarily not necessarily your usual way of tackling a lookalike product. People tend to think about unfair competition or passing off legal grounds in Europe. Mm-hmm. But I think more and more brand owners are turning to trademarks with reputation and the enhanced scope of protection of those trademarks, trying to register their packaging getup as a trademark, and then basically take action on that basis. So those are the trends that I'm seeing, James.
Yeah, that's very interesting. Yeah, and I mean, I suppose people in different countries will have their own examples, won't they? But I know in the UK, we've sort of seen some quite high-profile disputes around things like cakes come to mind, which have been attracted a lot of attention.
Yes, indeed, and also I think in the energy drink sector and pet food as well, there have been a couple of decisions in the High Court and IPAC as well in the UK that actually look at this unfair advantage claim that I was talking about. I think courts and judges and more and more open to the idea of actually deciding cases based on this unfair advantage claim.
Yeah, that's very interesting. Yeah. And it'll be very good to see how those cases sort of develop, I think.
Yeah, and just to add, James, apart from the retail sector, which is more common, you know, to have lookalike disputes, it's always interesting to look a little bit at the pharmaceutical field as well, because then you get disputes there, at least here in South America. And it can be a very sensitive matter because, you know, people might create a wrongful association. And since you're talking about pharmaceutical products, about drugs, this might be a health issue as well. So just to add that point too.
Yeah, it could be a life or death issue.
Exactly.
Interesting. Are there any particular cases that either of you are following, either decisions that have, you know, recently been decided or something that's pending before the courts that might be very useful and cast some light in this area?
In this respect, James, since I'm located here in Brazil, I do know the jurisprudence from the European courts, but of course I'm not following that closely. You know, but what I can say, a very recent development here in Brazil, and that it's happening as we speak, is that the jurisprudence of Brazilian courts is changing on infringement of lookalikes, because the understanding until now in Brazil was that, you know, lookalikes or trade dress, trademark disputes were a matter purely of the law. So judges would decide it with, you know, on their own understanding, on their own conclusions. But the courts are changing their minds now and are starting more and more to demand expert reports. So, you know, technical opinions by an expert appointed by the court to say whether there is an infringement or not. And this, of course, has positive developments, but it also has negative developments. You know, the most big one is probably that it makes litigation more costly, you know. So we still have to follow up on this development here in Brazil, but it's something that is changing at and that will affect, you know, day-to-day disputes involving lookalikes. You know, it's not yet a fixed understanding of the courts, but we're seeing more and more decisions coming up saying that technical opinions are needed in cases involving infringement of lookalikes. So this is something to follow and see what the final conclusion and what the final understanding of the courts will be. So this is something interesting to look forward in terms of lookalikes in Brazil.
Very interesting, and no doubt something we'll see more about in the next edition of the lookalike chart, I expect.
Of course, definitely. This commentary will be included for the Brazilian part, for sure.
Benz, what about from a European perspective? What do you see?
Yeah, very interestingly, something similar, because, and if I was listening to Felipe, I'm kind of amazed that they're looking at something similar there as well. There is literature in cognitive neuroscience that brand recognition is one of the most powerful mental shortcuts for the consumer. So I suppose scientific evidence and hard evidence on not necessarily confusion, but more a change in consumers' minds on more kind of how a lookalike product influences shopper behavior. I think articles and science in this field are fascinating, and I would also expect that courts and judges would be more keen to look for this evidence. But there's one crucial element that they should not expect that there is confusion, because lookalikes often do not cause confusion. They often dilute the famous brand or impact the goodwill and free ride on the brand's reputation. And I think I will be on the lookout for changes in the law in around the world to not require a likelihood of confusion anymore in a lookalike case, but rather look at what impact the lookalike has on the brand and how it dilutes the brand, how it takes advantage of the advertising spend and marketing spend that the brand owner has put into that brand over the course of the years.
Yeah, that's very interesting. And it's something, I guess, that courts have not really done in the past, and perhaps not recognized the extent to which the color and the get-up and everything else is important for consumers. And maybe that will change.
Exactly. I think many lookalike cases in the past have been decided in the defendant's favor if confusion or damage are required to be proven as part of a case, because even without confusion or damage, there can be an infringement. And hopefully more and more courts and judges around the world will start to realize that taking unfair advantage is essentially free riding on the marketing spend and the resulting goodwill, and can dilute the brand and can influence consumer behavior.
Yeah, well, I think we'll all be interested to see how that develops over the next few years. And I can think of a few cases where it could be very relevant. So should be well worth watching. We're coming towards the end of the podcast, so I just want to ask a couple of things. Most importantly, Felipe, can you tell everyone where they can get a copy of the lookalike chart? I think, it's, as I said, it's available on the Marks website, but there are also plans to make it available at the annual conference. Is that right?
Yeah, usually the chart is published in the unfair competition team at Marks website, but it usually it's also distributed to the attendants of the annual conference on USB sticks. I don't know if this year we'll have USB sticks again. But if yes, the chart is usually there, so people can download it and easily consult the chart. So those are the two main areas where people can download the chart.
Yeah, and obviously the easiest way for anyone listening to this to get it straight away is to log on to the Marks website, go to the Unfair Competition Team page to publications, and you can download it there. And if you're not a Marks member, then you should be. And maybe this is the right time to think about becoming a Marks member.
Exactly.
And finally, Benz, Can you just give us an insight into any plans the team has for the chart in the future? I think Felipe mentioned maybe some more countries from different regions for the next edition. Any other plans?
Yes, I think that's the only thing that I can mention to see how we can go from 47 countries to even more and consult each other in terms of what the relevant jurisdictions would be. And I think every couple of years we do a more comprehensive review, taking a look at the questions. Are they still relevant? Are they not? So I would expect that we would discuss this in Madrid and then take it from there, make decisions from there. So I'm really excited about that.
Great. Well, thank you both very much for taking part in today's podcast, Talking Marks podcast, and for explaining all this to us. I think it's a really interesting topic. I know people find the lookalike chart very useful as a resource, and I'm sure they'll find this year's equally useful, and we'll be interested to see how it develops in the future as well. So thank you, Felipe and Benz, for taking part today.
Thank you so much.
And thank you to everyone who's listened to this podcast. We're very grateful for your company and your attention. If you are attending the annual conference in Madrid later this month, do say hello to us and do give us any feedback on the Talking Marks podcast. And we very much welcome all your input. We do hope to have another podcast going live very soon. So do check the normal places to find out more about that. But in the meantime, thank you very much for listening and see you again soon.
Join us again soon for another podcast on an important issue for brand owners. To find out more on our website and guest speakers, visit marks.org/podcast.